Right off the bat, there's Lyle Thompson.
Kylie Ohlmiller showing off those shifty skills.
Driver driving hard down the alley, and he scores.
What a goal from Josh Bird.
Kayla Trainer
slips and scores.
You're kidding me.
By Dylan Ward.
Gets topside. Rambo scores.
Welcome to Pro Lacrosse Talk, your go-to podcast for interviews with professional players, coaches, and executives, as well as the latest news and analysis from all three professional lacrosse leagues. Now, here's your host, Hutton Jackson.
All right, what's up, Pro Lacrosse fans? Welcome to another edition of Pro Lacrosse Talk presented by Fanatics. I'm your host, Hutton Jackson. Today I'm joined by PLT contributors Brian Andrews and Matt Brignotti. Same crew as last week, so, welcome, guys. I appreciate you guys joining, as always. We're going to cover the NLL Finals, which wrapped up in dramatic fashion this weekend, as well as PLL Week 3, and kind of look ahead to PLL Week 4 as well. As I mentioned, this podcast is presented by Fanatics, so if you are a Mammoth fan or looking to get any of the Mammoth championship gear, definitely go to NLL Shop. You can use our link, prolacrossetalk.com/NLL Shop. To go there, and that actually gives us a slight kickback if you end up buying anything there. So helps us keep the podcast going, and we appreciate you guys supporting that link if you do end up buying any of some Colorado Mammoth gear. But without further ado, let's kind of talk about this NLL Finals. This NLL season wrapped up in crazy fashion. Bandits were favored for a long time to win the championship, make it to the finals, win game one, and end up getting back-to-back losses to the Mammoth. They weren't able to put up more than 10 goals either in both those losses. That was something that they were accustomed to scoring a lot of points throughout the year. The only team that was able to hold them under that was the Rock before the Mammoth did it now in the finals. Dylan Ward's named MVP. I kind of thought that he would be the MVP if they ended up pulling it off, because I thought they needed a big game out of him. He delivered a 55-save game. So Dylan Ward gets over the top. You know, Trade Ward has been a meme that's been kind of circulating for a long time now, and he's one of the best at dealing with the criticism. And you know, talked to him on the podcast recently. And I think Adam Moore had checked, and the guy that had been tweeting Trade Ward for a long time is actually now, like, suspended on Twitter or whatever. So he's not even around, you know, to now have Dylan Ward gloat. But congrats to Dylan Ward and the Mammoth for winning the NLL championship. 2022 NLL Championship. Last time they won it was in 2006. Brian, I'll go to you, because we both thought the Mammoth had a chance in this game, but still, crazy still to see it come to fruition, them winning back-to-back games and claiming this title. What did you see from this game that the Mammoth did so well in order to knock off the Bandits?
I was really happy. I mentioned last week, I was happy that the Mammoth were giving them as much competition as they were, because I think we all who were following the NLL season really – just kind of at a certain point accepted the eventuality that the Bandits were going to be the champion. And the Mammoth defense really showed up. They really stifled the offensive scheme of the Bandits. They limited them in transition. Obviously, Ward won the MVP. He had 55 saves. He was unreal. But I think you have to give a lot of credit to the composure of the Mammoth team, especially in that last game. That last game was like a whole different universe in terms of officiating. The Bandits just could have, you know, killed somebody and the refs wouldn't have saw it at all. You just have to have a lot of respect for a team like the Mammoth going into Bandit Land, the Lion's Den, getting into a street fight with the Lion, and then still coming out on top in front of a near record setting crowd that's historically very hard to play in front of. That's such a stressful environment to win in. And to go there and win and get booed while you're having acceptance speeches, you know, I was rooting for them by the end of the game, even though I came into the game rooting for the Bandits, similar to the way I was rooting for Maryland in the NCAA championship, just because they were so dominant all season, set multiple records, players and team-wise, you know. So it was a shame. It was a shame that they lost after having such a dominant performance, but so much respect was earned for the Mammoth for me, and they might end up being my second team going into next year behind the Wings.
Yeah, no, you got to give them a lot of credit, too. You mentioned all that they were up against in Game 3. They were also without Eli McLaughlin, who actually was activated but didn't play. He was a scratch. So I don't know if that was more of them trying to throw the Bandits a little bit off there. I don't know how healthy he was, but he clearly wasn't healthy enough to play in that final game and missed Game 2 as well. So didn't have him. Didn't have Ryan Lee for essentially the whole playoffs. And then you're still able to go up against this Bandits team in front of, you know, a home crowd of 19,000, where the refs weren't on your side, and pull out this victory against, you know, arguably one of the best teams. I think you can probably say the Bandits are one of the best teams to not win a championship since maybe the Toronto Rock loss to the Philadelphia Wings in 2001. You know, the Mammoth didn't really feel like that heavy of underdogs, but just based on this season, they kind of were, you know, against this Bandits team. And how many times did, you know, myself included, did we talk about how this championship was coming from the East? You know, the Toronto Rock versus the Bandits, that's the real championship. Whoever wins that's winning the, you know, NLL final. And, you know, the Mammoth said, we'll take your narrative and we'll throw it out the window and we'll go out and win, you know, the 2022 NLL championship. So, yeah, give them a lot of credit. You know, a former wing, Anthony Joachim, had a big goal in this game. I thought he played really, really well throughout the series, too, on defense. And, you know, credit to the Mammoth, too. Credit to Brad Self, their GM, for making the right moves. And I don't want to pick on the Thunderbirds, but Thunderbirds were a team that made a lot of moves that and then ended up kind of looking worse after, because they made a lot of moves for big key players, brought in some guys. Some guys went out the door, and it didn't end up like – meshing and working out for them or whatever. And, you know, again, they played a tough game against the Rock. So it's not like they didn't play well in the playoffs, but they just really didn't look like that dominant team we saw at the beginning of the season. You look at the Mammoth on the flip side, you know, Tyson Gibson's clearly a star, but they brought him kind of being kind of a role player. Connor Robinson, who we knew was good during his rush days, wasn't really, you know, touted as one of their top guys compared to, you know, maybe a Mark Matthews or a Brian, compared to like a Mark Matthews or a Ben McIntosh. But they bring him in. He does wonders for this team. So, you know, against all odds, the Mammoths still pull it off. And I think that's, you know, give a lot of credit to Pat Coyle, the coach, for really getting this group to buy in and, you know, grind through some tough series. That Seal series was tough. They came back. They had so many second half comebacks. And, you know, again, Dylan Ward, a big reason why they were so successful, because they could rely on him in net even when the defense wasn't playing at its best. So, yeah, it was a phenomenal championship. It was really, really chippy throughout, and I agree with you. I thought, you know, the Bandits did get away with a lot, but, you know, didn't faze the Mammoth at all. They ended up pulling out the 10-8 victory, and, you know, they win their first championship since 2006 for this Mammoth team. So congrats to them. And they're also owned by Kroenke Sports, so they're having a pretty good run now with the Rams winning the Super Bowl, and now the Avalanche are looking like they could win the Stanley Cup. So not bad for Stan Kroenke's sports entertainment group and what he's been able to do. But, Matt, any thoughts yourself on this NLL Finals or the NLL season as a whole?
I actually did get into the NLL a lot this season. I go to school in upstate New York, so I went to two Albany Firewolves games. That was super fun. I really enjoyed that. And yeah, I watched game three from midway through the first quarter till the end, and I thought it was just a really great game. I'm really glad I got into it. I'm not as knowledgeable as you guys in the NLL or as I am in the PLL, but I'm still learning, and it's like really fun to watch because it's a whole different brand of lacrosse. And yeah, I'm definitely going to be going to a lot more games in the future. And yeah, it was a really fun season for my first real season as a fan.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's nice seeing like Albany kind of get a team back again and whatever, and, you know, the growth of the sport. I mean, New York has four NLL teams, which is crazy. Rochester, Buffalo, you know, a team on Long Island, and obviously Albany now too. So New York definitely loves their lacrosse, as I know you do, Matt. But you mentioned the PLL. We now finally have some guys that were playing in this NLL Finals. They'll be back. Ironically enough, the Chaos take on the Water Dogs. So a handful of these Bandits guys are going to face Dylan Ward in week four, presuming that they all suit up. Now, we don't know if they have any lingering injuries that they were playing through. We saw a guy like Westberg actually take a week off, you know, between him finishing up with the Seals and then rejoining the Chaos. So it might not be a perfect story, you know, scenario where we kind of essentially are getting a game four of the NLL Finals. Obviously, much lower stakes being at week four in the PLL, but I do hope we see that. It will be interesting too. I don't know, you know, Dylan Ward's one of the few people that plays goalie infield and box at such a high level. Obviously, he just won NLL MVP. Guy could be up for a PLL MVP, you know, depending on how this season goes. But to me, it's interesting to see, like, I wonder how hard it is for him to kind of switch gears to go from box lacrosse to field lacrosse. Obviously, you have to play like a slight, you know, a much different style. So curious to see how he does, you know, stepping back in a bigger net on the field. But hopefully we do get that. That'll be a Friday night game, and we will get to that in a little bit. But we'll start off with this Chrome versus Water Dogs game. You know, we mentioned no Dylan Ward for them for a third straight week. This is what kicked off week three. I'll go with you, Matt. Water Dogs, despite all the injuries, gave them a great game. Chrome still ended up on top and you know, at the top of the standings. But what did you see from this game, both sides?
I think if you're the Water Dogs, you're happy with how you played. You know, the Chrome came in 2-0, looking really strong, and you're up 14-11 in the fourth quarter. And then that's when the injuries showed who you're missing, kind of showed, you know, they're missing Steve DiNapoli, their captain, really great short stick defensive midfielder. They're missing Jake Withers, their faceoff guy, and Connor Farrell at the end. The Water Dogs were up 14-11. Connor Farrell wins a bunch of faceoffs in a row. All of a sudden, it's 14-14, and you haven't touched the ball on offense since you went up 14-11. And that was a huge difference maker. Tucci played really well. I believe he was 15 for 32. And, you know, he did that against Connor Farrell, who is normally one of the better guys in the league. So he played great. But Withers, I think, would have had a little bit more success. I don't think he would have allowed that run that Farrell went on in the fourth quarter for them to go on that huge run to take the lead. And, you know, you're getting Ward back. I think he's an upgrade from DeLuca. I don't think DeLuca had the best game, but Ward is definitely an upgrade. He'll help them there. And, yeah, just that fourth quarter collapse by the Water Dogs again. This is another week where they blow a lead in the fourth quarter. And I think this also shows just a lot about the Chrome. The Chrome, you know, the great teams in this league, they always find a way to win. And even when you're not having your best game, some things are off. It was 14-11. They found a way to win, and they actually covered the spread. But, yeah, they still found a way to win. And I think that's, like, that's the sign of a great team, is just finding a way to win when you're either down in a game, you're in a dogfight, and that's what the great teams do. And I think the Chrome are showing that they're a really great team.
Yeah, no, and, you know, credit to Brendan Nickturn, had six-point day off of this Chrome. He's looking great, you know, through three games as a rookie. Obviously, Logan Wisnowski's looked great as well. But nice to see him, along with Dylan Malloy. Just this attack line looks great. You know, they have all the right pieces. You couldn't ask for, you know, after losing so many starters from last year, and obviously Dylan Malloy played a little bit towards the end of the season, but this is really a new attack line, and they've fit in seamlessly. But I do want to give credit to you, Matt. You predicted that Tucci might actually do decent against Farrell. It took him a little while to get going, but, you know, similar playing styles as Withers. So credit to you on that last podcast mentioning that, you know, it wasn't such a big advantage for Farrell. It did kind of pay dividends towards the end of the game. But, yeah, this Water Dogs team is interesting. Like, I still don't think they're as bad as their record, you know, shows. You know, no team is really ever out of it. But this defense is really – no excuses here. Like, DeLuca played well week two, didn't look super great week three either. Obviously didn't look great week one, but you know, the Dogs defense has to do better in front of him. And now even with Dylan Ward coming back, I don't think Dylan Ward's going to solve that many problems. You know, this defense, just, you can't give up 17 goals in this league. It's going to be really hard to win, and credit to the Water Dogs for even like hanging in there. You know, and being able to put up that many points to make it competitive still at the end, despite, you know, the Chrome coming back. So, yeah, I don't know. This Water Dogs defense is too talented on paper to kind of be giving this up. And we have talked about their woes at short stick defensive mini, and that's kind of what separates the good defenses from the greats. And I also, you know, not maybe specifically this game, but week two, a lot of times their own minis were getting caught on defense too, which is never a good recipe for, you know, a defensive performance. But yeah, it's a bit of a head scratcher. They're going to really have to come together. Hopefully Dylan Ward can provide a spark for them and maybe make a few more saves that can kind of get them going and playing at an elite level like they did last year. But overall, not impressed with how this defense has played through 3 weeks, despite this offense looking really good without Sowers, you know. And Sowers' impact, whether he's scoring or not, he draws attention. And, you know, the Chrome were able to do a little bit more things, I think, on defense, even though they gave up 14 points themselves. You know, it kind of played into their hand a little bit. So credit to the War Dogs offense for still putting up points despite not having Sowers. But I'll go to you, Brian. Thoughts maybe on the Dogs, or you have any thoughts too on the Chrome, likewise on how good they've looked, or, you know, pros and cons for both teams?
I think you guys really covered it for the Water Dogs. I mean, this is the second week in a row they felt competitive throughout the whole game. Week one, they just showed up too slow and never caught up. Past 2 weeks, they just, you know, let up leads late in the game, and they couldn't keep pace. So they really just need to figure out a way to put together a full game, whether they, you know, come out with the pedal to the metal at the beginning of the game on offense or able to hold off an onslaught of shots at the end of the game. They just haven't put together a full 48 minutes, and they need to figure out how to do that with the personnel that they have at hand. They are showing that they can consistently put up points, so I agree with you that it's on the defensive end to, you know, make sure DeLuca or Ward or whoever is seeing shots that are low percentage shots so they can make some saves, maybe generate some transition and keep a lead. But I think that this doesn't tell us too much about the Chrome. I think, you know, I don't think we're going to see the Chrome letting up 14 goals too many times this season. And I think up to this point, we know what the Chrome team is. And I think I personally at least am kind of waiting for them to run into, you know, the whip snakes really to see if they're really worth their metal.
Yeah, I agree. Not that they haven't played bad teams, you know, recently. But, you know, obviously the Redwoods didn't look good week two. We think they're a pretty bad team. Water Dogs deal with injuries and currently sitting at 0-3. So their only real quality win, I would say, is Archers, you know. And good teams win in this league, you know, no matter what. So I'm not saying their last two wins aren't, you know, admirable. But I do agree with you. It's going to be interesting to see how they match up against the Whipsnakes, against the Atlas team. That will kind of be a true test. And I think they're up for the challenge for sure. I think both of those will be good teams. But, definitely waiting to see a little bit more. They're definitely a playoff contender this year for sure. But, you know, seven teams make it. So got to see how they do down the stretch. And we'll move on now to the Atlas versus the Whipsnakes because we mentioned both those teams. Two other teams sitting towards the top of the standings. Whipsnakes hand the Atlas their first loss. A team that looked downright dominant the first 2 weeks. And unstoppable. And they do it. The Whipsnakes do it despite losing still the battle at the stripe. It was, you know, closer to 50-50 than the first 2 weeks for Trevor Baptiste, but he still beats Joe Nardella, you know, percentage wise. And, but the Whipsnakes still get the win. I'll go to you, Brian, about, you know, let's maybe start with like the Whipsnakes defense and what you saw from them to be able to stifle this Atlas offense that looked so unstoppable the first 2 weeks.
Yeah. The Whipsnakes defense is just the textbook for the value in really honing fundamental skills on the defensive end of the ball. They don't press out too hard. They make their man beat them, and they play great help defense, and they're great off ball. You never saw Eric Law open once, basically, that entire game, and it's hard to be able to guard a man like Eric Law off ball like that. But they basically force you into a position, you, the opposing team, where I don't have to come get the ball from you. You have to get around me, and I'm going to make it as hard for you to do that as humanly possible. And that's like the simplest defensive plan you could possibly scheme up. You see like the chaos and even the Chrome at some points during the season have gone out and really pressed teams that they felt like needed to calm down and set up a dodge or set up some sort of play and get those teams out of the rhythm. The Whipsnakes don't care about that. They know that the guys behind them will cover the off balls and the picks and all these other things, and that their communication and their decision-making is so great that they don't need these complex game plans outside of maybe putting a shorty on Eric Law. So they're just really a simplistic masterclass of fundamental defense. And it's really fun to watch week in and week out. On the Atlas side, they were suffering on the defensive side for Atlas. They were suffering from some miscommunications. I felt like coming out of halftime, Rexford was giving Rambo a little too much room to run. There were a couple times where he was getting hung up at X because Rexford couldn't get out there fast enough. And then Rambo would push aside and Rexford wouldn't really meet him until Rambo was at GLE with the head of steam. And then that allowed Rambo to get to the island, or 5-on-5, if you like to call it that. And that's where Rambo wants to be. That's where the Whipsnakes offense is going to thrive off ball, because Rambo has the option to, you know, question mark, do a million different moves, or throw the ball off ball. The Atlas doesn't really have the defensive quality off ball that the Whipsnakes have. So I feel like it was a really competitive game, except for that quick run that the Whipsnakes really took advantage of some miscommunications and not pristine on-ball defense from the Atlas to allow them to go up. And Atlas on the offensive side of the ball, they only had 3 assisted goals that I saw. And then for whatever reason, the Atlas kind of let up. and let the Whip Snakes take the game away from them. I thought it was a really competitive game until they came back out from half, and the Whip Snakes kind of could, you know, walk away with the victory at the end because the Atlas didn't really put a lot of pressure on in the second half.
Yeah, I think the thing with the Atlas, too, is they are only as good as the sum of their parts, and their parts are very, very good. This offense, we like to say, oh, everybody eats in this offense. That is, like you said, Brian, because of a lot of assisted opportunities. You know, and actually, Jeff Teed, after the post game, he only had 1 point in this game, 50% shooting off two shots. He said he, you know, was kind of a passenger out there, you know, which was kind of a little selfish. Kind of disagree with him being selfish because he didn't really take that many opportunities. But, yeah, he wasn't as involved, and they were rushing a lot of shots. You know, Brian Costabile, usually, you know, great. He tends to get into some bad habits, though, where he tries to make too much happen. And he was 0 for 9 shooting on the day. So, you know, again, this offense – a lot of guys. Romar Dennis was 0 for 5. Curry was 0 for 4. You know, these guys, those guys are all talented players, but they thrive when the ball's swinging around, you know, and they're getting assisted looks. And a lot of those looks, I believe, were unassisted. You know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I feel like they, yeah, like you said, they were very complacent. And once they kind of got down against the Whip Snakes, they felt like they needed to kind of, you know, make the home run play to kind of get it within, you know, get within striking distance. But problem is they just need to kind of be patient, and they weren't really patient. You know, I don't know how quickly they were getting shots off in the shot clock, but I reckon they were not as patient as they probably could have been. And granted, when they were down late, they did kind of, you know, have a little bit of a comeback late there, but you know, gotta give credit to Jack Kincannon on the other end. He had a phenomenal first half and didn't honestly have that bad of a second half either. They were just on defense a lot because the offense wasn't playing, you know, up to par, and he's historically never been too great with outside shots. They end up getting 3 2-pointers on him. But I will say that I don't think any of the 2-pointers, other than maybe Chanichuk's, were like bad looks. You know, like I don't think giving up, you know, those 6 points off of 3 shots is necessarily what killed him this game. I think it was the lack of offensive production. But yeah, give credit to the Whip Snakes for sure. That defense played great. Kyle Bornler looks like his, you know, top self that we've known and loved, you know, the past, you know, the previous 2 years. Rough year last year, but as Coach Stagnia said, they didn't give him a lot of help last year either. Matt, did you see anything else that you want to add about the Whip Snakes Atlas game?
I think you guys pretty much nailed it all. One thing that I was thinking about as you're reading those Atlas midfielder shooting numbers is maybe is this the week that Jake Caraway gets activated and tries to, I don't know, about spark something, but I don't know, maybe just be like just a fresh face in that offense, maybe. But I don't know after just 1 week if they're going to do that. But that's just an interesting thought I had while you're reading those numbers.
No, that is a good thought, because if they do not at least put him on the restricted roster, he will be released to the player pool. So that is something to consider. And I think this would be actually a good week for them to activate him, give him a go, you know, start him in the lineup, maybe for Crawley or for Romar Dennis or whatever, just, you know, mix it up a little bit. As long as they, like, run from the midfield, utilize him, I wouldn't mess up with that attack line at all. I wouldn't ruin the chemistry there. But, yeah, run from the box a little bit, give him a go, you know, try to get him, you know, those open, you maybe longer-range looks. That's where he kind of thrived last year. So I don't hate that at all. And, yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I don't think you really need to take – like, I don't think the Atlas need to make any knee-jerk reactions to this week. You know, they just got to clean some things up. I know Coach Rubio told us that substitution game he didn't think was very impressive, and that's something that the coaches need to work on. But overall, yeah, this is something, one that they kind of just have to put behind them. I mean, if Whip Snakes make one less of those 3-pointers, it's a one-goal game, you know, and it's looking a little bit different. So, you know, credit, don't take anything away from the Whip Snakes, because they earned those shots and they earned those goals. But, you know, this game, the Atlas, you know, had a bad half, their first bad half of the season. I think they're going to take this and learn from it, and I think they'll come back better next week for sure. And speaking of scoring, you know, we've talked about the Atlas. We know they can score a lot of goals. This Archers offense is loaded. They put up 20 on the Canons, 20-9. Didn't even win the faceoff battle either. Crazy. So, Matt, talk a little bit about this Archers Cannons game. I know, like we said, you were in attendance. You know, Lyle was activated, but he wasn't enough to kind of hang with this Archers offense that just is looking absolutely potent this past 2 weeks.
Yeah. My key guy from this game was Stephen Kelly. I thought if Stephen Kelly played well, I thought the Cannons had a shot and they would have kept it closer and maybe pulled it out, because this was a revenge game for him. You know, he was on the Archers the last couple of years. I remember he scored the first ever PLL goal in an Archers uniform. They trade him this offseason. He's on the Cannons. He has a chance for a revenge game. He has a great game. He goes 66%, and I think he had 2 points. He had a really nice goal down the left wing. But then despite his really great game, the Cannons still lost 20-9, which it blew my mind, just like how good the Archers looked. And they're still missing Grant Amon, and their offense still is looking really, really good. So I think that this just shows that you really can't sleep on this Archers team, and their offense is just out of this world, really good.
Yeah, I mean, like, they've shown the past 2 weeks that even if they're not winning the face-off battle, they can still win games. And last year, you know, that was kind of evident at some points, but kind of reared its ugly head, you know, later in the season. Hopefully it doesn't do that again this year. But I think Ignacio, getting him back in the lineup eventually, you know, he looked fine week one. I think that they'll be okay. Like, I think he can hold his own enough, like, you know, but – then again, that was kind of Stephen Kelly, you know, the past three seasons for them too. Stephen Kelly never did poorly. He kind of held his own. You know, we just mentioned him. But I know, Brian, you think that it was more, you know, Cannon's self-inflicted wound. You want to touch on a little about, you know, their game and how they kind of played into the Archers' hand in this one.
Well, yeah, I mean, basically on paper, Stephen Kelly's the only person on the Cannons that had a really good day. So terrible day to want to ban the face-off. But like when you just look at the box score, something that really jumps out is Cannons had 21 turnovers. That's way too many to have in this league. If the other team that you're playing doesn't also have 21 turnovers, Archers caused less than 50% of them. They still had 9 caused turnovers. Like, they were just giving the ball up way too much. And something that the box score doesn't tell you is a lot of the time Stephen Kelly would, or one of the wings of the Cannons would, come up with the ground ball on the faceoff and then immediately turn it over. So Stephen Kelly, him or his wing unit, was not generating 21 of those 30 potential possessions. They were just picking up the ground ball and then losing it. So that stat is also, like, really misleading. The Cannons, even outside of that aspect of the game, were just entirely their own worst enemy. Just unforced turnovers on offense or clearing, couldn't finish the job of faceoffs, and they weren't making stops on the defensive end. So that's literally, like, everything – like, except for winning the initial ground ball on the faceoff, and you just can't win games that way. So the Cannons are kind of feeling like the water dogs who can't score. And it's tough for me to see what their direction or what their course correction moving forward is, because the execution is just not there. And if they're going to have games where they turn the ball over like this, and their defense, which hasn't changed a whole lot since last year and was also a slight weakness last year, I don't see how they're going to be able to make a deep playoff run that way.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think, you know, they're looking like one of the worser of the bunch, you know, not as bad as the Redwoods, I don't think. But I'm curious to see how they do eventually against the Redwoods or a Chaos team, you know, now that we'll be at full strength, because, you know, had that big win against the Water Dogs week one, but that win has looked less significant as the weeks have progressed because of how the Water Dogs have looked. So, yeah, I don't really know what to make of the Cannons. You know, whenever you have Lyle Thompson in the lineup, you're always going to have a shot. But it is a little concerning to me that, yeah, they're turning the ball over a lot. And it's not like this offense, you know, has been completely overhauled or anything. They added a few guys, you know, like Asher Nolting, but he had good chemistry with Lyle. Brendan Bomberry's had plenty of chemistry with Lyle and Shane Jackson before. So it's kind of like you said, the unforced turnovers. Like, there's not really an excuse for this offense. Even though they're missing Paul Rabel now, there's not an excuse for them to, like, look this poor. And the defense is, you know, something we kind of pointed out, is didn't really get better. They didn't get worse, you could say, on paper. But they're definitely, you know, not one of the stronger units, I don't think, in the league. So overall, this team, I think, is just average, you know, and sometimes teams can get by when you know, the Archers can get by if they have a weakness at the faceoff because they are so good on offense. And they got Adam Gittleman in cage and their defense is strong. But the Cannons right now, they just feel like a, you know, below average unit in pretty much every position group. They just happen to have the best player in the world. And I think if they were missing Lyle, you know, even though they looked decent without him week two, I just think they're going to have a really hard time. Like, I think you remove Lyle from the equation, and this team is looking like the worst in the league. And even adding him in, like, is he able to make that big of an impact that can turn them around? I don't know. So, yeah, definitely interesting to see how they progress. They're definitely not high on my list right now in terms of top teams in the league, though. And as I mentioned, the Chaos Redwoods fighting for their first win. Redwoods end up pulling it out, 11-7. Really, really ugly win. I don't think we've gotten too much more confidence in the Redwoods after this one, just given to the fact that the Chaos are still missing so many guys. So we'll see the Chaos hopefully in complete form this week, and if not this week, definitely week five. But thoughts on the Redwoods? They get that win, but did they change your mind a little bit at all about this team at all, Brian?
Not even a little bit. The only team you've been able to beat so far is, you know, the team immediately ahead of you in season scoring is not, doesn't feel like a very impressive win. And you said, Hutton, last week that this should be a favorable matchup for the Redwoods offense, considering how aggressive the Chaos defense has come out playing this year. And, you know, sometimes when you overextend against an ISO heavy team, that can really play into that team's favor. And I think that's a lot of what we saw, even though you're right, the game was incredibly messy. It was an ugly game. I will fully admit I was looking at my phone a lot during this game, and I'm not convinced that the Redwoods are finding their groove after that performance, and I think they're going to have a lot of trouble if they run into the Chaos again.
Yeah, you had some guys like Dane Smith, Josh Byrne. They're going to put up a little bit more points than what they rolled out. No disservice to the guys they do have on the roster. But, yeah, definitely, like, if you're the Redwoods, you know, you were looking to come out and kill the Chaos. And, you know, even though you win by four, which is a lot in this league, it still didn't feel, you know, completely satisfying when your offense has been floundering and they still only put up 11. So similar thoughts, Matt. We don't have to dwell too much on this game, but thoughts on the Redwoods at all, or even on the Chaos, too, and what you've seen from them through 3 weeks, you know, kind of weathering the storm with so many guys missing.
Yeah, I think that the Redwoods, yeah, I wasn't impressed either. I think you're playing a Chaos team that is just missing so many guys. They have a lineup that is, I hate to say it, full of guys who are going to be in the player pool probably once all the Bandits guys come back. And the Redwoods, you know, they're at full strength pretty much, and you can't really pull away from the Chaos until the second half. And the first half of lacrosse, it was probably up there with like the like most hard to watch PLL halves of a game that I've ever seen. And yeah, I think that the Redwoods, I saw someone use the term Deadwoods on Twitter. I wouldn't go that far, but I think that the Redwoods definitely still have some work to do. And although this is a step in the right direction, a win is a win, I think that there's still definitely some concerns on this team, no doubt.
Yeah, no, for sure. And if you're Andy Towers, you know, I don't think you're too concerned. You would have liked to, you know, get one of these wins in the first 3 weeks. But I think your biggest challenge is constructing the right roster, because, you know, right now, this roster is loaded still, like without these guys. Like, you know, I mean, there's some guys that I could see, you know, getting dropped to the player pool. You know, unfortunately, I think Tommy Palisak is probably a roster casualty. But other than that, like, you look at this roster, you know, Challen Rogers is a guy that had all the game for the Chaos. Like, you want to have him in your lineup. I don't know. I could potentially see him being a healthy scratch just because they want to get their, you know, guys they had success with last week. But, like, you look up there on this lineup, and this is the lineup they rolled out in week three. Blaze Reardon, obviously, in net. You had Mac O'Keefe at the midfield along with Challen Rogers. Kyle Jackson played, you know, midfield and attack. Tanner Cook, obviously, they do more righties, lefties. You got Austin Stotts. You got Westberg. And then short stick defensive midi, Mark Lassini, Pat Resch, Zach Eddies. You may be one of those guys. You leave him off the roster. You put him on the restricted. They could still get Jonathan Donville back. Like, he was on the reserve roster. You know, no changes, obviously, on the starting defense. But, you know, I just named all those guys. And you're going to now have to fit in Chris Kluche, Josh Byrne, Chase Frazier, and Dane Smith. Like, you know, I maybe named two guys that you might take out of the lineup. It's going to be tough. You know, pretty much what it comes down to. Andy Towers has a tough task deciding who he wants to play because he essentially is getting his championship squad back. But guys like Tanner Cook, who's played well, and Kyle Jackson, who had success with them last year in that championship run. Ryan Smith had success with them in the championship run. Like, you know, those are guys that are going to stay on your roster probably. So does that mean Austin Stotts is a, you know, casualty, goes to the restricted roster? Or, you know, does that mean, you know, Chandler Rogers is, you know, or do you give some of these Bandits guys some rest and try to find some different lineups to roll out? I don't know what the answer is. Good problem to have, but definitely one that is not going to be fun for Andy Towers to kind of have to decide going into week four. But another big thing we had this weekend, in addition to these four games, were the Pro Lacrosse Hall of Fame was recognized. So they had made those announcements back in February. Since you were in attendance, Matt, you want to talk a little bit about the ceremony? I know it was relatively short, but kind of thoughts on how they honored these 11 guys entering the Pro Lacrosse Hall of Fame, and kind of talk a little bit about the gold jacket ceremony.
The ceremony, it happened during halftime of the game that was on ABC, Archers, Cannons. And I thought it was really, really cool to just, like, it's almost like the Pro Football Hall of Fame when they get the gold jackets at the ceremony. It was really cool to see, well, the PLL Commissioner Mike Rabel put the jackets on them. I thought that was a really cool moment for them. And they just kind of like read off each player's teams that they played for and their accomplishments. And yeah, it was a really, really cool ceremony. It was cool to see guys that like I looked up to growing up getting inducted. And yeah, I really liked the gold jackets too. I thought that was a really nice touch and a really cool ceremony. And I'm interested to see like the players that will continue to go in and the players that will continue to get inducted year after year, because like it'll be more and more players that like I grew up watching in the MLL. So I thought that was a really, really cool moment.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I love how they did the kind of starting lineup format this year, but I hope they kind of abandon it in order to get some of these guys in, because they have a lot to backfill, you know, in terms of older MLL legends as well as, you know, newly retired guys in a couple of years that they're gonna have to get in. But yeah, definitely nice to see them getting honored. You know, we've been fortunate enough to I've interviewed guys like Casey Powell, Mark Millen, and Paul Cantabini on this podcast. So definitely go back and listen to those episodes if you haven't already. Particularly the Paul Cantabini one happened right after he was inducted into the Hall of Fame. So definitely check that one out. Nice touch too that his mom returned his cleats that he had left on the field in his last game. So nice story there. If you haven't heard that, definitely check out our episode with him. But yeah, nice touch by the Ravens and by the PLL to kind of honor those guys. Definitely looking forward to seeing how they do that going forward. Nice to have, you know, pro lacrosse, pro field lacrosse all under one roof again. But we'll go now to PLL week four in Baltimore. Probably going to be a sold out crowd in Homewood like it always is. Starting off the night with a rivalry game between the Whipsnakes and Redwoods, although it feels a little bit less of a rivalry game just because Redwoods have looked so poor. But I'll go to you, Brian. Think the Redwoods can maybe make it a game against the Whipsnakes, kind of, you know, add a little bit to this rivalry? You think they're going to be motivated to make it close, or you think it's a Whipsnakes game to lose?
Maybe I'm just salty because the Atlas just lost the Whipsnakes, and I had to look at, you know, graphics saying the Atlas are 0-4 lifetime against the Whipsnakes. But I don't really get the whole rivalry thing here, considering that the Whipsnakes have such a heavy they have such a winning record against the Redwoods historically, and I don't think this is the year that the Redwoods should be expected to pull a win out, at least not at this juncture of the season. So I want to say going into this game that the Whipsnakes are just going to smack the Redwoods, but I just know that's just never the Whipsnakes style. I mean, their first 2 weeks, they, as I said earlier, they narrowly escape teams that are showing that they're not, you know, the strongest in the league, and then they go out and then they beat the Atlas by four, so I just think the Whipsnakes are addicted to keeping games close and letting their opponents have some hope that they're going to stay in the game for a little too long, and then, you know, Rainbow's going to shoot an OT winner. So I think the game's still going to end up somehow being close, but I think the Whipsnakes are going to be in control steadily the whole time.
Yeah, similar thoughts to you, Matt, or how do you feel about this game?
Yeah, I have similar thoughts, too. I think that, you know, most of the games in this, like, rivalry have been close. And I think the Whipsnakes are the better team. I think the Redwoods still have problems that they need to iron out. TD Erland hasn't been as as dominant this season as I thought he would be. So I think Joe Nardella is going to have a pretty good game against him. Like, and yeah, I think that the Whipsnakes are going to come out with this one, but I don't think it's going to be the blowout like everyone thinks it's going to be. Well, at least on paper, it should be.
Rare that we see blowouts. I will say, though, I do think the Whipsnakes are going to kill them. I thought the Redwoods had a favorable matchup last week against the Chaos. Obviously, they pulled the win, even though they didn't look that impressive still. I just don't think they're going to match up well against this team. I think this defense is going to really limit their, you know, offensive opportunities, like quality offensive opportunities. I think the battle of the stripe will be close, you know, even if TD does perhaps edge out Nardella. And I just think this Whipsnakes offense is going to be able to, you know, effectively neutralize this defense and put some past Troutner. So, you know, might come back to bite me. You know, maybe we do see a close game. Maybe the Redwoods do even pull off the upset. But right now, from what I've seen, even with the Whipsnakes not looking great, you know, really the first 2 weeks, I think they're gonna have a pretty solid day against the Redwoods, in my opinion. But we'll see. See if I'm right. See if it's a little bit closer. Who knows? Obviously, I'd like it to be a close game. We want close games in this league, but this is one I think could get out of hand pretty quickly. Moving on to Chaos Water Dogs, we kind of hinted at this one earlier because you will have the return of hopefully some Bandits players and Dylan Ward in Cage if all goes according to plan. Thoughts on this one? Both teams looking for their first win. One of them's not going to get it this week. You know, I know we like talking betting a little bit, and if you guys are interested in more on that, Bet on Lacrosse will come out later this week as well. But Chaos are favored in this game. Brian, do you think it's kind of the Chaos's turn to get a win here, or maybe the Water Dogs get it done despite their injuries?
I kind of hate to say it, but I think this who returns from the NLL dependent. But if the rosters are as we know them currently, I think it's going to turn into a Woods Chaos from last week. I think it has the potential to be kind of a slower, sloppier game, considering, you know, plays in net. And I think that the Chaos aggressive style of defense will be well suited to the injured Water Dogs and the sourless Water Dogs. So I think the Chaos are going to have a little bit of a better time pressing out than they did against the Redwoods. So I think the games could be a really close slog. But ultimately, I think the Water Dogs are going to be able to pull this one out. My tune would totally change if some of the offensive firepower came back for the Chaos, though. But I don't want to commit hard to that stance and then have them wait a week before they can come back to recover from the really long NLL season.
Yeah, interestingly enough, I think, you know, regardless of whether they get their guys back, I don't think Dylan Ward really will fix the defensive issues. And a lot of the problems with the Water Dogs are those quick goals off the faceoff or quick goals in transition. Chaos love their transition goals. I think Chaos, if they're able to get some of those transition goals, I think they could win this game pretty, I don't want to say easily, but I think they should win this game, even if they're not having some of their guys back, even. Because, you know, we just laid out their roster as is. It's pretty good on paper already. So it will be interesting, you know, if Withers is back, definitely gives a little bit more of an edge to them, you know, depending on if Adler's back. So that's also kind of interesting too, whether it's Adler versus Withers, whether it's Tommy Kelly versus Withers, whether it's Zach Tucci versus Adler, Zach Tucci versus Tommy Kelly. You know, we could see a bunch of different matchups at the stripe. But right now, I do think the Chaos, it's a good matchup for them to kind of get right. And for the Water Dog, they definitely have a chance. But I just think that this defense has to, you know, play a little bit better. And this Chaos offense is not by the numbers at all. So it's going to be harder for them, I think, to even to match up with this team. But I don't know. Do you feel the same way, Brian, a little bit to that regard in terms of the Water Dogs defense?
Yes, but I also think in terms of the face-off matchup with Withers, I think a lot of the turnover issues that the Water Dogs were facing and some of the face-off woes will go away and it'll allow them to control the ball a little bit more. And also outside of transition, the Chaos's offense as it stands right now has been really slow on the offensive end. So if the Water Dogs are able to control the pace and limit that transition, I don't see how the Chaos really pull away, even though the Water Dogs have been struggling slightly on the defensive end. The pace at which the Cavs offense has been finding their first shot, at least from a visual inspection, has felt so slow that I think the Whipsnakes aren't at such a disadvantage as long as they limit transition.
No, good point. So, yeah, you know, pretty much in agreement that it will come down to whether the Chaos can generate transition or not. I think they might be able to. You think, you know, Water Dogs are able to maybe keep it in check, especially if Withers is back. Matt, your thoughts on this game, similar to either one of us, or you got a different angle kind of with this one?
Yeah, I think it honestly just depends on who's in the lineup. Like you guys said, like there could be so many different combinations at the faceoff X. I think that Brian made a good point. It's a really long NLL season. So are we going to get that playoff run Chaos offense that we saw last year? Or are these guys going to be dealing with some lingering injuries after a super long, really hard fought NLL finals when guys were just literally beating each other up? How will that affect the players on the Chaos? And Dylan Ward, I'm not expecting Dylan Ward to be like a godsend for the Water Dogs and fix their defense. I think he'll help out a lot, but I'm not going to blame him. He's probably going to go on a championship bender of some kind, so he's probably not going to be like 100% dialed in. So I think that it honestly just depends on that injury report and who's playing. I don't think you can pick a winner here until you see that.
No, for sure. And we won't know that really till Wednesday. We'll get a better idea of, you know, who's questionable, who's doubtful, who's activated. And then you really don't know until like the day before, even, you know, kind of what that final lineup is going to look like. We saw that with Grant Amon being in and out. So yeah, definitely interesting this one. Then we move on to Cairns Chrome on Saturday. You know, we mentioned kind of the highs of the Chrome, the lows of the Cannons. So I'll kind of simplify the question. Do we think the Cannons have, you know, a decent shot at beating the Chrome in this game? You know, obviously any team has a shot in this league, but or do we think it's going to be, you know, a 4-0 start for this Chrome team? Start with you, Brian.
I think this is a really tough matchup to fix as many issues as the Cannons demonstrated that they have this past weekend. I think Farrell is going to be a really tough matchup for Kelly. So I think that potential advantage is going to go away. I think the aggressive and very impressive Chrome defense is going to pose a problem, even though the Cannons do have a very potent offense. If the Chrome can cause some turnovers, in addition to what I'm going to presume will be a number of unforced turnovers from the Cannons, I think the Chrome from the faceoff and from those turnovers are going to be able to generate a lot of transition, which the Cannons have historically been very poor at dealing with. So I think at a certain point, the Cannons are going to have to switch around their personnel a little bit and find a groove that seems to, I don't know if it would solve some problems, but they need to make changes to try to just invigorate some life in so many different parts of their team. And the Chrome are going to be a really hard team to make such strong adjustments for.
I 100% agree with Brian. I think that the Chrome's defense has been impressive this season. And I think that the Cannons, besides Lyle, I don't know if they really have like the talent to really beat this Chrome defense. Like the Archers defense, they're good, but as Brian said, the Cannons, they beat themselves. And I think that this Chrome defense is a little bit better than the Archers defense that the Cannons saw last week that they didn't look great against. And I think that Farrell will make the faceoff battle close. If not, the Chrome will have the advantage there. And I think that the Cannons are going to have a really tough time this game. I do.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think just the Chrome's opportunisticness too, that's kind of what won them that game against the Water Dogs. You know, they kind of, they got that goal. They tied it up at 14. And then even going up 15-14, they never took the pedal off the metal. You know, where some teams will get complacent and play not to lose, they played to win, you know, and end up getting two more goals out of it. I think this game, you know, could be close. I don't think, you know, it's going to be like compared to the Whipsnakes Redwoods, where I think Whipsnakes, it could get out of hand. I don't think the Chrome will really pull away from this Cannons team at all. I don't think we'll see another 29 loss like last week. But I do think this is a good matchup for the Chrome up and down the board, defense, offense, face-off stripe. You know, it might be a little bit more 50-50 at the face-off stripe, but I think as long as Chrome limit their mistakes, which they've been pretty savvy in limiting those mistakes, the probably last game was the one where they had a lot of turnovers that kind of, you know, cost them that lead and eventually you had to get dig that out of a hole there. But I think as long as the Chrome don't beat themselves, they should win this game. You know, and I think that's where it's going to come down to the Cannons forcing them to kind of beat themselves, forcing them, causing some turnovers. This defense, if this defense comes out and, you know, really takes it to the Chrome and does, you know, cause some transition opportunities for their offense, that's where I think you see the Cannons build a nice lead and maybe pull this one out. But yeah, I'm leaning Chrome as well for this one. Just doesn't look good on paper for the Cannons so far this year. So I'm going to lean Chrome as well. Final game of the weekend, probably the most anticipated one, Atlas versus Archers. Archers, you know, lost to that Chrome team, so they're 2-1, but, you know, Atlas as well, sitting at 2-1. Both these teams feel like they could have easily been 3-0 teams. You could make a case for both of them being at the top of standings despite being at 2-1. What are your thoughts on this game? I'll go to our resident Atlas fan, Brian. You know, do you think the Atlas get it done against this Archers team, or do you think it's a very close one?
I think it's a close one. I think this is going to feel like that, like 17-16 game last year between the Atlas and the Cannons. I think it's just going to be, you know, shooting from the hip from start to finish. I think the Atlas offense is going to come out, you know, with their ass on fire and just gunning for the goal the entire time. I would hate to be Kincannon or Gittleman. Because I feel like the Atlas offense is going to feel like they need to make up for the performance against the Whipsnakes, where I know that they underperformed a little and didn't come out with the sense of urgency that was required. But that's the name of the game for the Archers offense. They're going to do that. They are really good at being their matchup, drawing a slide and finding off-ball open shooters. And I think there are plenty of times where Atlas have demonstrated that that is not one of their defensive strengths, even though K-Ben Rapports is a great off-ball defender. A lot of their strengths rely around shutting down their 1v1 matchups, and they have a lot of personnel that are really good at doing that. They're going to have to show to beat this very potent Archers offense coming off of a 20-goal win that they are going to have to play phenomenal off-ball defense. So that's their key to win. But I think it's going to be super close and very high scoring.
I think that the key, well, as a face-off guy, I always look at the face-off matchup. I think that Baptiste against, this should be Inacio if he gets his visa issues fixed, like I think he will, or if it's the other guy, Frankie Labetti, I think his name is. But I think that the Atlas have such an advantage there. I'd be shocked if they didn't win 60% of the draws, because I think Trevor is just that much better than either guy that the Archers put out, and I think that'll be the difference in this game. I think that the Atlas, I think, you know, they'll come back this week a little pissed off after that loss, and I think that they're going to I just think that they're going to pull it out. I think that they have such an advantage at the stripe, and I think that the players on offense, they're going to hold themselves accountable. They know that they struggled shooting and they struggled moving the ball, and I think that they'll fix the mistakes. And I think Ben Rubio is going to watch the film super closely, and he's going to realize where they went wrong. He's going to adjust, and I think that the Atlas are going to pull this one out, and I think that the key is going to be Trevor Baptiste just giving the Atlas offense so many more opportunities than the Archers offense. And although the Archers offense is one of the best in the league, I think that the Atlas are too, and the Atlas offense are just going to have more opportunities in this game.
Yeah, I tend to lean Atlas in this one as well. It's going to be an interesting one for sure. I think it's, you know, hopefully there's live betting on it, because I think it's going to be up and down. Like, I could easily see Atlas going on a 4-goal run, Archers going a 4-goal run, Atlas going a 2-goal run, Archers going a 2-goal run. Like, I think it's going to be that type of game where these teams are going to score in bunches, but they're going to still, like, have, you know, 5 or 6 lead changes by the, you know, when it's all said and done.
The real question is, who's going to have more 2-point attempts, Kobe Smith or Scott Ratliff or Jared Connors?
Yeah, that's a great question. We could even see, maybe Graham Hasek go a little over the midline and stuff. He doesn't tend to do that, but we know in the NLL he can score in transition as well. But, I think that's going to be an interesting one. Both these teams have a lot of two-point threats, so we could see that. I think, though, I think both teams are going to play fast because I think that's the way they like to play or whatever. Clearly, the Atlas got into kind of a slodge of a game against the Whipsnakes, and I don't think they want to repeat that. So, I think patience is still going to be kind of the name of the game when it comes to being in settled offense, but I think these teams are going to push in transition a lot. I do think it's going to be high scoring as well. But bet on lacrosse, we'll talk about this a little bit more, but over under set at 25.5, that's already pretty high. So I don't know if I can say over that. I'd probably lean over that, but these two defenses can play really, really well as well. So going to be interesting. Definitely looking forward to this one. This is probably the one I'm looking forward to the most, and a lot on the line for these teams. One team will move to 3-1, one will sit at 500, after great starts of the season for them. So honestly, if you're them, definitely want to be 3-1 as opposed to 500. So definitely looking forward to that. But that's going to do it for us. Thank you guys for listening. If you tune in late, this episode will be on our podcast stream as well. Please subscribe to that if you don't already. Leave us a 5-star review if you enjoyed this episode, either on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. But we appreciate you guys tuning in. Appreciate you, Brian and Matt, for joining me, and all our listeners for tuning in each week to another episode of Pro Lacrosse Talk.